blue 80. Shut up. And I snap the ball, and there's just this horrific splash.
It's time to join the stink tank.
You're right, Jets fans. That's the one right there in the middle.
And I'm like, I'm just going to go. And I completely emptied my bladder on the bench.
I like to call myself a Jason Bourne of pooping.
Mark Schlereth.
This stinks.
Every Tuesday with Wyman and Bob.
Well, we have to do this. We're under contract that every week we have to talk to Mark Schlereth. So, Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline right now on the phone is Mark Schlereth. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing good, Dave. How's your knee?
Well, it's fine. I heard that you were maybe a little bit envious of me having a higher number of surgeries than you, or does that make you a tougher guy, or what? What's going on?
Oh, hey, listen, I have not had the surgery because I'm too fat yet. but listen, I'm working toward it.
You said you had to get surgery because you're fat. I replied, yes, that's exactly what happened. So, hey,
right, exactly.
Where were you last week?
Were you on the- I was in the nation's capital doing Philadelphia at Washington.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So I wanted to ask just a general question to start you off. What do you, I mean, they're 3-0. Miami's 3-0. Is Philly as talented of a team, or what do you who do you think's the best team right now, or who surprised you around the NFL?
Well, I think that obviously one of the big things is Jalen Hurts, right? Was Jalen Hurts going to be able to step up and kind of play better football? And he certainly has done that. He's been pretty incredible thus far. And it's really interesting because you look at, the narrative around Josh Allen, for instance. And if you remember the first couple of years, there were a lot of people that thought that was a mistake, right? There were a lot of people that, he's just not very accurate. His completion percentage is only in the high 50s. He's yada, yada, yada. And then year three, after playing a bunch and kind of that offense kind of settling into what he is and helping him along, the guy's become an MVP caliber football player and a guy that, a lot of people think is going to win the MVP or be a Super Bowl favorite. And I see that same kind of leap or progression for Jalen Hurts in his third year. He's been incredible. And then when you look at the Philadelphia Eagles in general, from just a pure talent and depth standpoint, I think they're as talented or maybe one of the most talented football teams I have watched. A lot of times you think, Dave, you think big and strong, or you think, fast and athletic. Well, they're big, strong, fast, and athletic. Like, they've got everything. And so they're pretty dangerous. They're both lines of scrimmage, they're really good. And just from a pure talent standpoint, they've got two elite-level corners on the outside in Slay and Bradbury. And their receiving core is outstanding. I mean, they've just got a lot of really good players.
Hey, Mark, I want to take you back to last week, because I know you did the Seahawks-Niners game, and then Dave and I were talking about the defense again today because the Falcons lined up and did something very similar against the Seahawks. So from what you've seen out of this Seahawks team and what the Niners did so well and what the Falcons have done, how will the Seahawks try to defend what teams, it seems like, want to do against them, line up and just run the football?
Yeah, and it's really kind of and I haven't seen anything but highlights of the Atlanta game, so forgive me, but I'm busy, kind of prepping my games. But I will say this, one of the big kind of thought processes going into playing them is they don't think our teams don't feel as though they're holding the edges very well, that they've got a couple of guys on the edge that can rush the passer but aren't great run defenders. And so it's those C-gap runs, attack the C-gap or, opposite and cut back into the opposite C-gap. So you attack wide to the left and cut back in that C-gap, the gap between the tackle and the tight end for, those who are following along at home. So that's really the place where they feel like you can exploit them in the run game. And so, that was certainly what San Francisco tried to do. And I'd imagine that's kind of where the Atlanta Falcons got the majority of their run game going, because they're big and strong, with Al Woods and Puna Ford and those guys inside. So they really feel like you can isolate those guys, keep them inside, get the edge players wider than they want to be, and then you've got room to operate kind of in between those tackles and those tight ends. So that's kind of, that's kind of what teams have tried to do to them in the cutback game, and as well as pushing that point of attack.
Well, and I'll tell you what the Falcons did, Mark. They did exactly that. And then, you know, they use Cordarrelle Patterson, who's like Deebo Samuel 2.0, basically. But, you know, I mean, I don't think he's that good of a player that he ran for 170 yards. But, yeah, I mean, geez, the edges. And it's so important because the hash marks are in and, you know, you've got such a wide side there. But, you know, do you think it's youth or from what you saw from the 49er game? Or is that typically a youth thing, or is that just maybe they don't have the guys to play that? Maybe, you know, that's what I'm thinking about, like Daryl Taylor. You said he's really a talented pass rusher, but it's a different story when he's playing the run.
Yeah, and you know, you've got to have one, as you know, man, you've got to be able to set an edge, and you got to be able to turn it back to where your, you know, where your help is. But, you know, setting an edge is not one of those things where – you know, you get pushed a yard or two out, or the other part is if you get up the field too much, I call it kind of creating a swinging gate, is you may set an edge, but you may be 2 yards upfield. And all of a sudden there's a gaping chasm right there between where you set the edge and then where a safety is supposed to run up in that C gap and fill. And all of a sudden, you know, you give a back, you know, you say, hey man, all of a sudden a back comes skating through there. And, you know, that safety's got 5 yards of field to defend. Like, if you're a good back, you're going to make that guy miss. Like, if you can't make that guy miss in a hole that big, then you need a new back. And that's kind of the way it goes, right?
Yeah.
So, like, those are things that I don't think sometimes, you know, you can look like, hey, man, this guy really did a good job on the edge. And actually, he didn't. You know, he's upfield too much. Or he's getting too wide before he sets the edge and he's not squeezing it down. And then the other part of that is once you squeeze it and turn it back in, can you disengage and go help in on tackle? And that's another, you know, that's another part to that system when you're playing kind of a five down system, even though you're kind of in that hybrid 3-4 that a lot of people play, that Vic kind of quote unquote Vic Fangio defense that a lot of people are playing around the league right now, where you got three big guys inside and then you're setting the edge with kind of more pass rusher outside linebacker types. And so, you know, that's a lot of teams are playing that right now. And those edge players have got to be really, really good players.
Hey, Mark, when you were playing, were you able to get a sense of that if a defensive line was just not setting the edge well or doing something that you knew as an offensive line you guys could exploit? And how much of an advantage and really momentous edge did it give you guys throughout the course of the game?
Yeah, I mean, you can always, you know, that's where the run game is really important. That's where you know, a lot of organizations, they get away from it, right? They get to the point where they're like, everybody says they want to run the ball, but very few people actually really want to run the ball. You know, you don't get hired as a head coach because you've developed a really good running game. You know, you get hired as a head coach because you develop a young quarterback and you push it down the football field. And, you know, so there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of people that say they want to run it, but they don't really want to run it. And the other thing that ends up happening to you when you do it enough, like you get a feel over the course of, you know, two and a half quarters, what a team is trying to do. And, you know, when you get that feel of what they're trying to do, hey, they're trying to skate, you know, with you and let you, you know, funnel things down the line of scrimmage. You get that feel. And now you're like, okay, here's how they're trying to play us, guys. And then you come back to the huddle or you come back, you know, and you start to talk about this is what they're doing. This is what we're going to do. You know, here's our adjustment to it. And ultimately, the other thing is once you get that feel, everybody's on the same page and then you start wearing them down. You give me enough looks at it. You give me enough opportunities and eventually we're going to start breaking them off. And defenses, I mean, there's nothing more. And Dave will tell you this, man. Like you give up a 70-yard touchdown pass and everybody goes, hey, we blew the coverage, you know, hey. You know, I squatted a little bit or whatever. I fell for the double move and the safety didn't get over the top because, you know, we had, you know, somebody running some type of smash underneath the safety and kind of stopped his feet for a minute. And the wide receiver went down deep down the sideline. Everybody goes, oh, that's too bad. You know, we'll fix that. But I'm telling you, if you get in a game where we're going 5, 6, 3, 5.5, 7, 12, 4, 3, and you like, I've seen it, man. Guys are yelling at each other. They're dog cussing one another. Come on, you guys, we're gonna stop this, right? And we're just rolling downhill on your ass. Yeah. Like when that happens, there's nothing more satisfying as an offense to have that happen. And there's nothing more humiliating as a defense. And I played defense through college, my first 3 years of college. And I've been there when we couldn't stop anybody. And it's humiliating for a defense.
I was just telling a story about 1988. We played the 49ers, and I think I in USA Today, I had 20 tackles, and everybody was like, wow, you had a great game. I was like, this is the worst game of my life. I was making all of those tackles 20 yards downfield, 15. Like you said, it's just demoralizing. And hey, speaking of, you know, experiences like that, were you ever on a team where, you know, you had young guys that you needed to bring along? Because that's the one thing I've thought, you know, if we're going to suffer through these mistakes, and you saw it, you know, the penalties, especially on third down from Michael Jackson and Tariq Woolen. But then you see those two guys combine for a blocked kick, and you see how dynamic they can be. But as far as, you know, just kind of waiting out rookies, you know, hoping that they're going to get that experience. And were you ever on a team like that? Because I that's where I feel like with Pete, that they've got to stick with those young guys, and they'll just eventually they'll learn somewhere along, you know, along the way.
Yeah, I mean, that, you know, I've had those situations. Normally, you know, the league is so different than when you and I came in, Dave. Like, when I came in with Washington, like, even though I was a young player, you know, I was starting as a rookie, I had veterans surrounding me that helped teach me the game. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I always tell this story about Russ Grimm. I come off the field once, and, you know, Russ Grimm's a Hall of Famer, right? He had been to so many Pro Bowls, and Russ could play for about 4 or 5 games before his body just quit. And so then, but he was such a valuable asset to have on the sideline. And I'll never forget coming off the field and he's asking me, you know, like, what defense were they in? And I was like, well, like, hey man, they're in this 57 front and blah, 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 blah. And Russ is like, well, where was the umpire? And I was like, what? He goes, where was the umpire lined up? I go, what are you talking about? I don't look for where the umpire was lined up. He goes, of course you got to look for it. Like, say, hey, man, if that guy's on your inside, you can yank a dude down with your outside hand. If he's on your inside, he's like, Dave, you got to think about stuff like this, right? And I'm just like, whoa, that's a different level. But when you have a bunch of young guys, like in Washington, like every backup we had been an 8-year veteran that started for 4 years somewhere else. Like, we didn't have a bunch of young guys on our team. And so when a young guy played, he was usually sandwiched between, you know, a bunch of veteran players. And that's how the league has really changed. It's really changed that you get 3, 4, 5 young guys on a defense, and they're just trying to figure it out as they move along. And there's not that one dude that says, hey, sit down here and watch this film with me. The other thing is, you know, they send a bunch of, you know, they put a bunch of stuff on your iPad. And guys take it home. And there's a big difference between watching film and studying film. Mm. And you know, when, like, one of the big issues around the league right now, I've talked to multiple teams and coaches about this. You know, they can, like, they send that stuff home. And, you know, are you really watching it, or is it playing while you're playing Xbox? Yeah. And the issue that you get into, and this is why I think it's imperative to have guys come in and sit and watch film together, is, you know, 4 eyes are better than 2, and 8 eyes are better than 4, and 16 eyes are better than 8. And when you're all in the room together, like, hey, rewind that. Did you see that guy? Did you see how light he is on his hand? Or do you see how different, like, in the defensive line, how their stances are, and how that guy's about 6 inches forward, or that guy, watch. Every time he gets in that particular stance, or they get in that alignment, you know, they're running a tackle end game, or they're running an end tackle game. And I mean, it just, you can, somebody sees it, and then you're just in their room going, oh, okay, note to self, you know. And then you walk in the field and you see it, and before they even do it, you go, here comes tackle end, here it comes. And, you know, they're demoralized before they even start. Like, That was just how the game was played. And I think for the most part, it just isn't played that way anymore. And so it's harder, I think, to bring young guys along from an understanding standpoint than it used to be.
Hey, Mark, along those lines, the trend has been to move away from playing starters in the preseason. But Dave and I have just talked about how this defense for the Seahawks, it's taken a while to adapt with all the young guys. the starters don't play on offense, and then the offense looks rusty. Where do you fall in terms of starters playing or maybe not playing in the preseason?
Yeah, you know what? I mean, I've vacillated back and forth on it because I saw, I saw Sean McVay do it for years, and you know he was 5-0 to start the season going into this season without playing a starter, and then you know this year they looked horrible in that opening game against Buffalo, and I'm here in Seattle, or I'm here in Denver with you know Seattle's former quarterback Russell Wilson, and. You know, the whole philosophy here was we're not going to play anybody and, you know, we're not really going to hit that much in training camp. And they have been pathetic on the offensive side of the ball. And so, you know, listen, yeah, there's no way to get in shape to play football. You can jump over boxes and do burpees until you throw up, and you can do a lot of bench press tests and all that crap. And, you know, you can run 40s and do whatever it is you want to do. But the only way to get in shape to play football and to get really good at playing football is by playing football. Like it's just the truth. And so I there's a balance there and you got to play, you know, you got to take some reps. And, I will tell you this now, they're only 1-2, but the one team that played or practiced kind of a little bit like it used to be was the Detroit Lions, and you saw it in Hard Knocks. And let me just tell you, offensively, that team is on film. That team is solid. They execute well, both in the running game and the pass game. They're actually a real physical, very good team. And now they lost a game they should have won against Minnesota the other day when they had a pretty commanding lead. But the bottom line is from an execution standpoint. Now, talent-wise, I still think they have a way to go, especially on the defensive side of the ball. But physicality-wise, man, that team, they play the game the way it should be played, man. They thump people. And a lot of that is because of the way they practice in the preseason.
Yeah, I agree with you. That was very old school, and you know there was everybody at the station here was saying, "What are the odds that Wyman's going to love this coach, Dan Campbell?" Right. Yeah, absolutely, 100%. Hey, by the way, Mark, I was telling one of our players, Ryan Neal, about you were talking about the iPad, and they've watched it by the time they get off the bus to get to the plane, watch the entire game. But I was explaining to him that I would tape the games on my VCR. On my VHS and then come home and watch it. And I would also, tape Saturday Night Live and then, set it up to tape the game. And then I would watch it and I was explaining it to him and he was groaning the entire time. Like, can you imagine if we would, what they have access now to compared to what we had is it's pretty amazing. I mean, I think the only thing we got was that fax from up in the booth down, like every once in a while. Did you have that where they would show you the formation or whatever on that shiny fax paper?
We get the pictures, the Polaroids, right? And they come down and they'd snap us, and it would snap at 7 seconds before the snap and about 2 seconds before the snap. And then the coach would come coach it up off the picture. And I got in a fight with Alex Gibbs once because he brought it out. He's my whole line coach. He's like, well, if you idiot, this is, and he's always like, he just would cuss like up one side, down the other, right? There was nothing that was off limits. So he'd be like, you mother, blah, 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 this, that, and the other. And he goes, look, you, and I go, that's not what happened. And I go, they snapped it 2 seconds before. The guy went, the opposite. No, he ran right through your A gap, and you're in it. And I go, that's not what happened. So we'd go arguing back and forth and we're like shouting at each other. And thank goodness then nobody had the, nobody had film back. And like they weren't filming everything back then.
Yeah.
Because we're dog cussing each other. And finally he's standing over me like he's spitting and he's calling me every name in the book. And I took my helmet. I tried to break his sternum with it. And I hit him right in the chest with my helmet. And he just like lost all his air. And I was like, hey, if you, and he's about 5'8", 160 pounds. And like all the air comes out of him. I go, if you think you can block him, be my guest. If you can't, get the F away from me. And so that's how the conversation ended. And at the end of the day, because the picture is taken 2 seconds before it actually, before the action actually transpires,
right.
My grade sheet, it didn't say, hey, man, I'm sorry. It didn't say anything. My grade sheet said, you were right. That's all it said. You were right. Now, hey, man, I'm sorry. I got a little out of hand. Nope, you were right. We move on. We're not going to apologize, right? So that's how it used to be.
Yeah, nobody had to call a hotline because they didn't feel safe or anything like that. You know, that just.
I didn't go to jail for bruising his sternum. Yeah. You know, I mean, it was, just different.
Well, Mark, I'm sorry. Did you tell us where you're going this week? Is it where are you headed?
This week, I'm. It's interesting to me. I'm in Indy doing Tennessee, Indianapolis, and the thing that's interesting to me is. That division, I think at the end of the day, is probably going to be won by somebody with like a 9-8 record.
Yeah.
So even though, you know, the Colts are 1-1-1 and Tennessee is 1-2, they're still very much alive in that division. Jacksonville happens to be leading it. So, yeah, it's an interesting game to me.
All right. Well, have a good call and great having you on, Mark. Thanks, buddy. Talk to you next week.
Yeah, my pleasure. Be good. Get better. Get healthy.
Yeah, I appreciate
Thanks,
it.
Mark.
I'll lose some weight. Hey, if you missed any of our conversation with Mark Schlereth or anything from our show, make sure to check out our podcast page at seattlesports.com. You can also go to seattlesports.com/Bob or seattlesports.com/Wyman for all of our video breakdowns, articles, and more. Are we doing this ticket read here?
Yeah, you want to do it?
Sure. Seattle Sports has your chance to win tickets to see the Seahawks host the Arizona Cardinals on October. Why did it have September and October in there? There we go. October 16th. And for info and a direct link to enter the sweepstakes, text the word ticket to our new text line. That's 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jacks. Again, text ticket to 866-979-3776 for a link to enter. All right, coming up next, what do we got, Mike?
There's a piece to the Mariners right now. He will be the most important part of this final stretch, and he will be the reason why they make the playoffs. We're going to talk about him next. Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
This is Seattle Sports Station.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Dave, it begins tonight, the final homestand of the season. 10 games left in the regular season. We are both excited. Mike Lefko with you here in for Bob today. And Dave, did you know that tonight through Thursday, Mariners value games, 6:40 first pitches, all three nights, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday against the Rangers. It's the final homestand of the regular season. Kicks off tonight with three straight value games. You can get $10 view tickets, $20 main, and $30 Terrace Club seats. There are still tickets available at Mariners.com. I think it'll just be great to see them at home. It has felt like, maybe because of the losing and because of how tough that road trip was, it has felt like they've been gone for a long time.
Yeah, you're right.
Like months. Jeez. Like they've been gone for months, it feels like.
What was the last game at home? San Diego?
Yeah, which was a Wednesday that I can't even comprehend how long ago that was. Because they had that, then an off day, then the road trip. And I think because so many things happened, you had first the Suarez injury on that Friday night, and then Julio had the back issues. He came back. His back got hurt again, trying to fit in back as many times as possible. And a lot of moving pieces and parts. Cal Raleigh injured his thumb, and then the tough giving up 11 runs in an inning situation on Sunday. Just feels good to have them back home, and it feels like it's been a long time.
I think that's the one that would really fuel the fans to go, oh, geez, here we go again. The 11-2
lead.
Yeah, I think that's, they're the Mariners. Don't forget, they're the Mariners, or they cooged it, or whatever you want to say. I mean, the stigma that's built up over 20 years.
That's quite a weekend for that.
Yeah, it really was. So, but, it's interesting to, by the way, I was looking at the crowd, and I think Bob is always on the low side. I thought that at the game the other day against Atlanta, that it was about 95% capacity. And Bob didn't think it was anywhere near that.
Seahawks game.
Yeah, the Seahawks game. So, and this is, you know, kind of a down year. I mean, it's certainly the start anyway, is at least 1-2. So I would think for the fans, you know, that are going to be at T-Mobile, that they would be packed in there because, you know, you got an opportunity right now to really make a difference. I mean, if you believe that, you know, all the crowd noise and having that big crowd and the players talk about how much it fuels them, if you think that really works, I would think that these people that have been sitting around waiting for 20 years, two decades, would go to the ballpark.
Yeah.
And, you know, sell it out.
Yeah, you're going to see some exciting things tonight if you get there because if you miss this news, this is a big one. Eugenio Suarez is back. He has been activated from the 10-day IL. He's in the starting lineup tonight. He's the DH. He's batting cleanup. But in that corresponding move, tough news, Dave. Taylor Trammell has been optioned to AAA Tacoma. I know he's a fan favorite of this show. So yeah. Taylor Trammell down to AAA. Suarez is back. That is huge. One of your two key power hitters with Julio supposed to come back when his 10-day IL stint runs out at the start of next week. So he will have some time there. But as Jerry Dipoto said yesterday during the Luis Castillo press conference, all indications are that Julio should be fine and ready to go once that stint is up. So that's some good news. You do have Suarez back in the starting lineup. And you have a guy playing terrific baseball right now in Jared Kelnick. How about that?
Wow. That's to me, this would be so interesting because just to review, we pretty much talked about Jared Kelnick the entire season last year. And remember, he finished strong,
yeah,
in September. I think he had a good month, and I think he was batting over 250 during the month of September, maybe a little bit higher there. I might be shorting him. But, yeah, and then we just haven't talked about him at all. Everything's been all about Julio Rodriguez. And so, you know, as you put down on the show sheet here, just four games, right? Small sample size, but he's batting 375, three doubles, actually. Five runs, a home run, and a couple of walks. So, yeah, he looks really good right now. And so could this be it? Could this be when he makes his turnaround?
Yeah, slugging 750. He has a hit in every game. And so this was Thursday. John Morosi came on with Bob and myself after that first game when Kelnick had the double and the home run. Right. So he hadn't even gone on the continual tear over the weekend. But even after that one game, John Morosi noticed that Kelnick looked different up there at the plate.
He looks more relaxed, more at ease. And again, it's just one look. And so I really don't want to extrapolate too much. But I think at first look, he's taking better at bats. He was, I think, showing a better knowledge of the strike zone. And maybe he has finally gotten it in his mind that he's not going to worry so much where the fielders are and be too pull conscious or opposite field conscious. Just hit. And his athleticism and his hands are so good when he just lets them be. And I think for him, it's just been a matter of repetition. He's still a young guy and that he's still a very young player and there's still plenty of time. I hope that he internalizes that message as well.
All right, so he was, last year, at the end of the year, in September, he batted 242. And then the last three games, he was 300 against the Angels. He's an interesting character, man. And if he came back and became the hero of, you know, this stretch here and going into the playoffs, I just wonder how he's going to be received because we saw the other day after he hit the double and the home run in Oakland, he gets the Gatorade bath from Ty France. Didn't react well. Didn't really seem to think that was, didn't laugh, didn't smile.
Must be a Powerade guy.
Kind of. Maybe that's it. Yeah, maybe he's got a sponsorship with them and they threw Gatorade on him. But no, it's kind of interesting, and I wonder how if you saw that, text it in to 866-979-3776 because it's the Mac and Jack hotline text line. We tend to, you know, judge guys based on, like, maybe he's just not wired that way. Like, if that was Julio, he'd have a big smile and everything. Jared Kelnick is just an intense dude, man, and maybe that was just, we should just accept that, and maybe they won't. Because at first I was like, that was Ty France. Like, Ty France is paying attention to you. He's celebrating you. This is what, you know, I talked to a couple of the analysts about, and they were saying, yeah, this guy is recognizing you, and that's Ty France. And, you know, you've been up and down, so the fact that you got the Gatorade bath, that's what that means. And he just didn't take it very well. So, but you know what? You know, more I think about it, and then the more I hear that, hey, he's a good kid. There's nothing, you know, wrong with him. He's just wired a little bit differently. He's just a little bit more intense. You don't typically see that from baseball players that, you know, it's more of a football thing, I think. But he's just different, and, you know, his upbringing was different. So what's the big deal?
The only thing I could think of is that because of that intensity – and because he's so focused on the moment, whether it's the at-bat or locked into the game. And this is a little strange to kind of go to this mindset, but that he was so focused on that interview and doing the post-game interview. You know, he wanted to do the interview as well as he performed the game, that threw him off his rhythm, or that interrupted his thought. Now, the reaction is different than what you or I or maybe most people would if someone was celebrating with us because we just had a terrific game. But that was really the only thing I could think of, was like, all right, in that moment, he's focused on this interview. What is this disruption knocking him off his game? Or he was expecting water, and Gatorade just is a whole nother mess. But yeah, I have no idea. That was strange. That was definitely unexpected. But that was Thursday, and then he continued to perform well Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So from this small sample size, we certainly have a pretty good look at what Kelenic has done so far, and maybe what he could do these remaining 10 games in the regular season.
Yeah, you know, people are texting in. Sean in Spokane said Kirk Gibson. Was he a super intense guy, maybe like that? And somebody else said he's the Jim Brown of baseball's personality, because, I don't know, Jim Brown, I think, was kind of stern and not, you know, one of those lovable guys afterwards. But, you know, I think a lot of people think because of his upbringing, like he didn't go to high school, he didn't go to or play high school baseball, didn't play college baseball or anything. Like most of the players, the way they came in, they've been around, you know, their teammates on bus rides and plane rides and all that stuff. And maybe he didn't have that. And then the fact that his dad was his trainer and everything, kind of like we talked about the AAU basketball kids, you know, that just play in that league and then they go right from there to college and then the pros. So, yeah, it's just a different way of doing it. But, man, if I don't think, because lots of people are saying, oh, he acted like a punk and stuff like that. But if he is the hero going in and then, you know, plays well, if they get in the playoffs, I mean, he's going to be celebrated. People will be like, I don't care how he acts after a Gatorade shower. I don't care, as long as he gets hits, especially, you know, the offense right now. They need a little shot in the arm.
Oh, absolutely. And I think he can do that. And that's what you want him to do. Who cares how he acts if he's performing? So before we wrap it up here, we have maybe the definitive explanation. 253 says, my son said he read that blue Gatorade is his least favorite flavor. That's what he got soaked with. So that's why he was so mad. And we'll go with that. That makes as much sense as the rest of them. So maybe that's the explanation.
Yeah, but he didn't like look down and go, oh, it's blue.
Blue.
It was like the second he got doused, he was not happy.
Well, he knew. He knew beforehand what the Gatorade was, because it was in the dugout. Okay. We have no idea the issue. Maybe if we'll catch up to him at some point.
How could you get
after
that
the
mad
season,
at Gatorade?
Maybe in spring training next year, we'll ask him when it's a different mindset. It's not as intense as the final push towards the end of the season.
I'm poo-pooing your theory.
Okay. Well, there was a texter theory. So we'll see. Yeah. But coming up next, Dave, we got to get back to this Seahawks offense, and they have some second half scoring issues. We'll try to break down what's going on there. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com.
Wyman and Bob,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio
on Seattle Sports Station.
This hour of Wyman and Bob brought to you by Mercedes-Benz of Seattle. Dave and I are rolling out with our Mercedes-Benzes after the show.
Yeah, we're going to be their best friends, yeah. Not Bob.
What if Mercedes-Benz plural was like Benzi or something? What's the plural of Benz? Benzes?
Yeah. Mercedes-Benzes.
See, I've never had this issue. Literally, I've never had multiple Mercedes-Benzes. So, yeah. Maybe they can hook us up there. No, this hour is brought to you by
Mercedes-Benz. I'm not
going to
save you right now.
Seattle.
You're just going to sit there and suffer through this. You built
you're gonna
this.
Write it. You're going to write it down in your notebook of all my phrases?
Yeah, that's another one.
There you go.
Yeah, plural of Mercedes-Benz.
Is that the same notebook that you're writing down the restaurant recommendations,
yes,
and my,
it is,
my phrases?
I have one, and we need more, by the way, for Ryan Neal. We need more oxtail suggestions. Mm. I got Black Bottle. Somebody said it's down on First Ave. But
yeah.
We got... You know, I just put together five for Charles Cross. So we got Rosita's in Green Lake, Fonda La Catrina Airport Way, Patrona. I went J.P. Morosi there with it, rolling the R. Fogon Cochina Mexicana and La Fuente. So yeah, that's what we got for Charles Cross for as far as Mexican food goes. But yeah, we need more oxtail. I'd never really heard of oxtail before.
Yeah, we looked it up when we were talking about it on that Friday. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah. I do appreciate all the texts on that because there's some good ballad recommendations too. I don't know if Charles Cross wants to go all the way up there, but yeah. there are some good ones. Also, name this movie, the 253 just referenced here in this text. Never had a Mercedes, let alone many Mercedes necessitating Benzes.
No clue.
So it's the gun rack. Like, why would I need a gun rack? Wayne's World.
Hunting?
No.
Well, that's Wayne's World?
Well, there's a... I'll play the clip for you. Later.
Okay.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
Yeah.
So that's what it's from.
Yeah.
All right.
Maybe I screwed
that
up.
That's where your brain went.
In the retelling of that. No, I mean, that's where this reference was going there. Right. See, you and Bob are more on the same page in terms of your movie references.
Yeah, we're of a certain age.
Well, no, we are locked down on the Superbad train.
Yeah.
You had that one the other day. That's a good one.
Yeah, I like Superbad.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, so speaking of trying to get through something here, the Seahawks in the second halves of games have really struggled offensively. We saw a lot of good progress in the offense in the game against the Falcons in the first half. They had the six quarter scoring drought, and that was broken. They looked great in that first half. In the second half, this has kind of become a familiar issue. In the second half, just 3 points, 138 total yards. Are you seeing something differently in that second half? Is it just kind of combining the fact they don't get a lot of possessions? Or what do you take away from the fact that they really have struggled to score in the second half?
I think it's too early to draw a trend. I think everybody tries to connect dots and go, oh, why is it that remember, it used to be the other way around. I mean, everybody was like about the slow starts. And then, you know, Pete talked about how he liked to keep games close, and which I think there's lots of time, you know, my category of things that just get said. I mean, Pete just, he's being interviewed every single day. And so, I mean, you want to score on every single play. You know, it's not realistic, but like, that's what you think. That's what should be your thinking, that every single play we're going to score. Every single defensive play, you're going to get a takeaway or a sack or, you know, stop them for zero gain. So, yeah, it's just that's what the mentality is. And I think when something, you know, happens in the second half that didn't happen in the first half or vice versa, I think people try to connect dots. We'll see if this continues for the rest of the year. Yeah, there'll be something. Maybe it's they're giving things away, or, you know, other teams are able to figure them out. That, you know, that might be a thing, but I just don't think it is. You know, the other thing, you talk about the 3 points. They also, and I think it was late in the second quarter, got their first three and out on defense. Mm-hmm. First of the year. And when somebody said that to me, our spotter, Riley, I was like, you've got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
There's just no way.
Yeah, Michael Sean Dugar, I think, brought that up in the press conference middle of the week to Pete Carroll. I could not believe that. And then we went and looked it up to verify it was true.
And so they finally got, So that was before.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's I just hadn't even thought of that, but... Yeah, it's there's a few things. I mean, this is a slow start. I wonder very much. This goes back to the preseason. It's funny you had, you know, some a segment in here, because on the way in I was thinking, you know, we should go back to that, the whole preseason thing and how important that is. And like Mark Schlereth just told us, and this is true. I know it to be true. You can only get in shape for playing a football game by playing football. So it's not walkthroughs either. Like they talk about the practices and everything. I don't think they ever, except for what we saw, like he said, from Detroit. If you watched the Hard Knocks episode where they were out there scrimmaging, and afterwards he's like, guys, I'm sorry, but we have to do this. But it looked like a game. I mean, they were going full speed, full contact. That's, you know, I still think there's some value in that. I'll tell you what, when I first got to Denver, and that was Wade Phillips, who now is coaching in the XFL, but he was the head coach. We had 5 days of full pad double days. So 10 practices in a row, full go. And by the time the season started, and this is in camp I'm talking about, I was ready to go. It wasn't like I was, you know, you're always a little bit sore. It's a little bit more intense and things like that. But still, I just think you have to have some of that. I thought Shanahan did a really good job, and his son probably does the same thing, Kyle. But Mike Shanahan used to have us go out and do all the drills, all of our, you know, tackling drills and stuff with full pads. And then about halfway through for all the team sessions and stuff like that, take the shoulder pads off and, you know, just run around helmets and jerseys. So, yeah, that's kind of a halfway point there, you know, I thought was a good solution. But, Yeah, you have to hit in the preseason. And I think that's why a lot of teams, especially a young team like this, that's why they start off slow. So, I think it's one of those things that sounds like a great idea until somebody gets hurt, right? You know, you put your best guy out there and he ends up getting hurt. But, yeah, I think that definitely has something to do with whether it happens in the first half or the second half. That's kind of what's going on right now.
Yeah, it is tough because, you know, J.K. Dobbins, maybe the prime example. He just returned this past game against the Patriots, the Ravens running back who got hurt in the preseason in 2021. It took him that long to return to the field. So there are those scary cases, and you don't never want to lose a star. But what you seed and what you give away is the slow starts in these first few weeks. So maybe that'll iron itself out. We'll get back to the Seahawks certainly throughout the rest of this show, but have to turn our attention to the Mariners and what they're building. They have these final 10 games, but they also did something over the weekend that really solidified their case to be a future contender, not just for the playoffs, but for World Series down the line. Get into that next. This is Seattle Sports Station on 710 and seattlesports.com.